This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. The Hockey News Podcast is back in its truest form. The gang is back together. Matt Larkin here.
The band.
I'm with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. No more car rides. No more World Juniors. We're back in our office just doing the regular thing. I missed you guys. Did you miss me?
Of course we did.
Why not?
Well, thanks. How was the World Juniors? Was it good?
Yeah, it was all right.
It was all right? Not enough people there, though, you know?
No.
No, a little empty?
Yeah, there was us and a few friends.
Yeah.
No, it was... Actually, the final was really, really, really good.
Yes.
And I thought that kind of salvaged what, to that point, was kind of a meh tournament.
Yeah,
in a lot of respects.
A lot of reporters are pointing out that the lack of fans seemed to take away from the actual games because it just didn't feel like they were that intense.
Yeah, I get it. I get that.
Yeah, and if I look back at the games, I think the final's really good. I think that the quarterfinal between Russia and the U.S. was good, and the quarterfinal between Finland and the Czech Republic was good, but those are basically the only good games in the medal round.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and there were lots of blowouts, and
yeah.
I don't know, I think that the point about the, you know, playing in a great arena like that with so few people in it, I think there's a really good point to be made that it's just hard to get up for those, to feel like there's much atmosphere in those games. I remember when the Toronto Marlies used to play at Maple Leaf Gardens, and I'd go down and there'd be like 1,000 people there, and it was just depressing.
Yeah, it sucks the energy out of the building.
Yeah.
If you want to hear more about the World Juniors, there's a full recap, a separate podcast that you can listen to. It's on our website right now. But let's switch gears to the NHL for this regular podcast. And we're at roughly the midseason point. Most teams have played 41 games. You can kind of double everybody's stats. We have a good sort of sense of who's been the best of the best at every position. So let's talk midseason awards. And first off, I want to hear who you guys pick as your midseason Hart Trophy winner as league MVP.
Well, okay, so we're saying if the season were to end today.
Right now, we're casting our ballots,
Nathan MacKinnon. Mm. Nathan MacKinnon of the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, that team is in the playoffs. Team's in the playoffs. Colorado Avalanche are in playoffs.
They're 1 point behind last year's full season total.
And I think a big part of the reason is that I actually just crunched the numbers. I think we're going to be talking about them later. Their record isn't all that much better since they traded Matt Duchene. But I think what's happened is that, you know, I mean, Nathan MacKinnon is now the guy.
Right.
And I think that he's taken that role and he's taken that responsibility and he's really run with it. And I mean, what more do you want in an MVP? I mean, that's exactly what you want in your most valuable player. You want him to say, I'm the guy. I'm going to be the guy that does this. I'm going to carry the team, you know, and I think for that reason, you know, and if it stays this way and they stay in the playoffs at the end of the season, I could certainly see him be a number one on my ballot.
Yeah, no, a very good one. I like that rationale. I'm going to go in a more sort of populist way and go Nikita Kucherov with Tampa Bay. It's interesting because I was thinking about the ballot at the end of the year, and it almost feels like because the Lightning have so many good players up top that they might suffer in the balloting in terms of split votes. So I'm going to have to figure out what to do at the time if things stay the way they are. But I mean, you look at the numbers that Nikita Kucherov is putting up, and it's just they're the best team in the league by a country mile. He's been a revelation. He just keeps getting better every year, and you think like, okay, well, that's pretty good. Nikita Kucherov's had a pretty good year, and then he just comes out and blows it away. So that's who I'm going to go with for now.
It's interesting, too, because the very fact that there is that potential for vote splitting between Stamkos and even Andrei Vasilevskiy, Hedman, is that almost a strike against Kucherov's hopes of winning the MVP? Because if you have that much help,
it absolutely is.
Are you the most valuable guy to your team? Because, I mean, even a week ago, I was still in the Kucherov camp, but, I mean, I know it's a bit of a recency bias because Colorado's so hot right now. But, I mean, if you're really thinking the true definition of the award, it's not supposed to be best player. I think Nikita Kucherov is the best player in the world right now. If the award goes to most valuable, maybe Ken's right. I don't know. I might be swayed to the Nathan MacKinnon side because I think Colorado without him is nowhere. I also think the Islanders, I mean, the Islanders have cooled off, but they're also nowhere without John Tavares.
They've cooled off
big time. They need goaltending.
Yeah.
So that's a little scary too because you think if you're John Tavares, I mean, yes, arena situation is looking better, but if your team misses the playoffs this year, are you thinking, they want to go to a different situation where I can win a bit more? I don't know. I wonder about it now.
Yeah. Look what I did to Josh Bailey. Does that mean nothing to you people?
Oh, man.
Well, they got Kiefer Bellows on the way, the guy who scored nine goals at the World Juniors this year.
We think, but I mean, that it's the Islanders. The Islanders had Ryan Pulock on the way. They still have Michael Dalcol on the way. They have Josh Hosang on the way. Everyone's on the way. We don't know if they're going to get there.
Now Matt Barzal is there.
Yeah, Matt Barzal has arrived. He was on the way for years, and his train finally arrived in the station.
He is who we thought he was.
That's right. Going for the Vezina now, I mean, I think we've got to stay in the Tampa Bay camp. I mean, to me, if you're not saying Andre Vasilevskiy, you're overthinking it.
Oh, yeah, right.
Peter I hope Peter Budaj's not listening to me laugh at the mere mention of his name. Like, the fact that just hearing his name made me laugh. Sorry, Peter. But, I mean, yeah, Vasilevskiy, he's having almost, like, the numbers look like Dominic Hasek in 98. He's got six shutouts already, goals against average under two, save percentage almost 940. I know all these numbers because I have them on my fantasy team, so I've got the numbers memorized when I'm bragging to people. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't think you could give it to anyone else.
Well, and I actually recently talked to John Cooper, and he basically said that he's been their MVP this year. So, I mean, the best player on the best team in the mind of the guy who watches them and play every day and coaches them and practices them and everything. So that's good enough for me.
Yeah. I think what's also interesting is this is the first season that he didn't have the Ben Bishop safety net / platoon / guy that was taking his starts from him. And Vasilevskiy has taken it to the next level with Bishop gone. And what's also kind of interesting, and I know we'll get into it later with Pittsburgh, is Matt Murray is having a tough go of it, and a lot of it's injury-based, but even when he's playing, he's not at the same level he was when he had Marc-Andre Fleury on that same Penn squad. So just sort of an interesting side-by-side there with what Vasilevskiy's been able to do while having backups that were clearly designated as his backup.
For sure. And I think it's a big shout-out to Steve Yzerman as well, because he had the confidence in Vasilevskiy. He handed out that deal when Bishop was still on the team. So he basically handed Bishop his future walking papers by giving Vasilevskiy that extension in summer of 2016. So he sort of foreshadowed what was going to happen now. And it was a huge vote of confidence, I think, for Vasilevskiy. I do think Jonathan Quick has been almost in a tier of his own as the second-best goalie in the league this year.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Corey Crawford went healthy. I mean, Chicago's having a tough enough season up and down. Imagine what they'd be without Corey Crawford this year. I can't imagine, right? What about the rookie race? I mean, it's interesting because every time we think we know, okay, this is the guy, then someone else emerges, right? I mean, it was Clayton Keller in October. It looked like he was running away with it. Then in November, everyone was talking about Matt Barzal. And now it looks like it's Brock Besser's award to lose, and he's almost pulling away from the pack. But we've got great rookie defenseman and Charlie McAvoy and Mikhail Sergachev. I don't know. Where do you guys lean?
For me, it's Besser. I think he's had, you're breaking it down to months. I think he's had more staying power at the front runner area than the other guys have had. And I mean, all he does is, you know, get a goal or a goal and an assist every game. He's doing it on a team where, you know, it's basically the Sedins and him. Everybody else is hurt. and I just think that, you know, I mean, for me, it's either him or Keller, because they're not only the best rookies on their team, they're the best players on their team. Both those guys are the best players on their team. You know, and I mean, we don't expect Charlie McAvoy to be the best player on the Boston Bruins. He can't. You know, we don't expect Mikhail Sergachev to be the best player so I mean, that's kind of a strike against them, because if they were playing for those teams, they might be the best players too. But you know, to me, when you're the best player, that really carries a lot of weight.
And with Besser, it's interesting because Vancouver was in town last week, and I actually got to meet up with Besser and talk to Coach Travis Green. And but one thing that Besser shared with me that was really fascinating, it's going to be an upcoming story. I don't want to give away too much, but the fact that everyone talks about his release and sort of Brett Hull-like, he said he didn't watch a lot of Brett Hull growing up. But the one thing that he told me that was super fascinating was, it's not a fluke coincidence that he's in those highlights, he's always popping out of holes, because he specifically trained as a kid shooting around obstacles. So he would have, like, where he was training in Minnesota, he would have physical objects all around him, and he would practice darting out from in front of them, behind them, and using them as sort of screens, all that kind of stuff. So he really did hone that skill, which is really neat. And the thing about Besser,
that's only the kind of stuff you're going to read about in the hockey news,
people. That's right. Exclusive.
Yeah.
I hope. And the thing about Besser too, it's not like, I mean, there's a perception that he's playing with the Sedins. He's not. He's playing with Sam Gagner and Thomas Vanek. That's who he's played with most of the season.
I think Thomas Vanek's been pretty good for him.
He has.
Thomas Vanek's been pretty good, period, this year. And I know that at the beginning of the year and when they started playing together, he really kind of, you know, worked with Besser and tried to pump his tires and help him out. So I think that actually has been a really good thing for him.
And I actually talked to Vanek about that specifically on Friday as well. And he said the one thing he's been teaching Besser the most is that if you don't have the play, don't try to score the goal. Look for your teammate. And he said he's been getting a lot better at that, which is pretty cool.
And I mean, you play with the Sedins, right? You're going to defer to the Sedins, right? You know, they're the guys, and they both got 1,000 points and everything and might be in the Hall of Fame. You know, they've been there forever. If you're a rookie playing with those guys, you're going to defer to those guys. So it's probably better that he's not playing with them.
Good point. I think Brock Besser is the answer. I will, for the sake of fun and information, put out there that with Charlie McAvoy, depending on what kind of offensive numbers he can put up for the rest of the season, he does have an outsider case, which is he's playing a ton of minutes, way more than any other rookie in the NHL. And he's doing it on what is going to be a playoff team because, I mean, the Atlantic's basically already sewn up. It's going to be Tampa, Toronto, and Boston. Those are going to be the only three teams. Whether Toronto or Boston has home ice advantage in that first round series is the only thing really up for grabs at this point. Everyone else will miss. So you have that in a mobile young defenseman, and if he can put up numbers that are, say, close to Besser's, then I think you look at the position he's playing and the responsibility that it takes to be a blue liner in the NHL, and I think you could make the argument that he would be just as worthy of that trophy. So at that point, you sort of say, like, okay, well, how many points does Besser put up? How clear is he of McAvoy? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would be sort of one sort of outsider argument.
That's a good point, Ryan. And because lots of times you can hide guys, right? And, you know, I mean, with Sergachev, you know, he was playing 7 minutes a game, then he was playing 10 minutes a game, then he was playing 12 minutes a game, and now he's playing, you know, 16, 18 minutes a game. But it's easier to hide a guy, you know? When you're playing the kind of minutes Charlie McAvoy's playing, you're not hiding from anybody because you're playing in all the tough situations, you're killing penalties, you're doing all those other things. So, yeah, I mean, that is a really good point. I think we can probably agree that for the second year in a row, it's going to be an American that wins this award.
Matt Barzal.
I don't think he's...
As a center, though, the thing about Barzal...
With all respect.
He's right there, Matt, in points with Besser.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to win.
But let me explain why. Yeah. Like you're talking about not hiding, right? And Barzal, as a center, he's the one. He's the driving engine on that line. And there was... I saw the stat the other day. He had the single longest... I think it was the highest single game puck possession total in terms of actual minutes with the puck on a stick.
Well, did you see an overtime yesterday?
Yeah, yeah.
He ragged it around the offensive zone.
3 minutes,
about 30
and 12
seconds
or something. So to me, the fact that Barzal's doing the opposite of hiding as well. He's driving a line. It's not like he's playing a wing with Tavares.
I'm not saying he shouldn't win. Yeah. I'm just saying I don't think he will.
I think he's in the mix. He's in the mix, though. To me, he's number two. I put him number two behind Besser.
Interesting.
But interesting point, though, for sure. What about the Norris Trophy? What do you guys think right now?
This is interesting because now, you know, for the first year in a little while, we don't have a guy putting up ridiculous numbers as a defenseman. I think John Klingberg's, at least the other day, John Klingberg was the leading scorer in the NHL.
Yeah.
He has like 4 goals and 38 points or something like that. Not, you know, those eye-popping numbers that we've seen from, you know, the likes of Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns and those guys in the last couple of years. To me, I you know, it's pretty hands down for me. At the beginning of the year, you know, there was a real good case for Alex Pietrangelo, but he got hurt and, you know, St. Louis kind of tailed off. To me, it's Drew Doughty. I mean, he is just been a beast this year. He actually is putting up a decent number of points. Not the kind of points that make him a good fantasy player, right, Matt?
No, this year he would be a good fantasy player.
But he's been everything for them. And I think for me, you know, if you're looking at the best all-round defenseman in the league right now, I don't think it's even – all that close. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but
yeah, no, it's Drew Doughty for me as well. And I mean, you know, part of it is the way the Los Angeles Kings have turned things around, and he's been a big part of that. The minutes that he logs, and as you said, the complete game that he plays. I feel like it's just there's too much of a hole for a guy like Erik Karlsson to come out of, and you know, we don't really consider plus minus that much anymore, but I don't think you can have a Norris Trophy winner who's like a minus 20 at the end.
Yeah, now that it's starting to get warmer and the chill is off, it's actually his plus minus is worse than the temperature.
most
of the time.
He's a bomb cyclone.
The weird thing about Doughty, so I agree, I'm in the Doughty camp, and it's any way you slice it. He leads the league in minutes, and his offensive numbers are good, and the possession numbers are fantastic. It's just every single angle you look at, he passes the test. But the irony is, if you look at the PHWA, and I know we're in it, so I don't want to diss my fellow voters too much, but there is a trend in my opinion. Erik Karlsson should have won 2 years ago. Doughty won it because he was quote-unquote due. Right. I think that was the thinking, old-school thinking. Last year, Brent Burns won it. I think Burns was the second-best defenseman in the league. Karlsson, I believe, should have won as well, but Burns was quote-unquote due. I think this year, Drew Doughty is going to deserve to win it, and he's not going to win it. It's going to be ironic, and I think it's going to be a guy like Victor Hedman. Because Victor Hedman is due. That's what I think is going to happen.
Well, if that happens, then we as a group should be – as my father would say, shot with a bucket of our own, you know what.
Okay, like not me. I voted for Karlsson. Bro.
Yeah.
So did I. I voted. Yeah. Karlsson was my MVP last year.
Oh, yeah. Oh there
Karlsson
you go.
Was my MVP
oh,
last
you
year.
You one-up me.
Anyways, but yeah, no, if that's the case, then that's just stupid.
Okay.
Hashtag, but he was due.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, and you know Ryan Suter is waiting for his buddy was due as well.
Right.
What about the Jack Adams Award for Coach of the Year? To me, this is an interesting one because when we did our little office poll, I think there was only one person who didn't vote for Gerard
Gallant.
Yeah,
and it was you.
It was me.
Yeah.
Spicy take.
Why do you hate – Kate, everybody from Vegas, Matt Larkin hates your team.
No, I don't.
No, he hates your team.
No way.
He hates your team. He said they wouldn't have 10 wins by 2018.
Yeah.
And he actually meant to say they won't have 10 losses by 2018.
Who knew? Who knew? But the thing is, who knew? It's not a rhetorical question. I want to know. Who knew? And please come on the podcast and explain. But here's the thing. Okay, Gerard Gallant, he's been phenomenal, and it's an unenviable task to take a ragtag group of players and make them have chemistry. But the thing is, to me, the hallmark of a good coach is when you inherit a situation that has not changed and you have an influence on it, a.k.a. what John Stevens has done in L.A. Yep. That team, the only addition was Mike Camilleri, and he's already been traded. So it's almost the exact same team.
They had a bunch of rookies. They brought in a bunch of young guys.
Yeah. But overall, it was largely unchanged. And to me, Doughty said in the summer, he's excited that that Stevens is going to let them play more open, and they felt that Daryl Sutter wasn't approachable anymore. And the thing about Gallant is, again, very impressive, but isn't it George McPhee that is the architect of this amazing story? He's the one that put all the players together. We have no idea whether the players would have performed great together with any coach. Do we know that it's Gallant that did the mastery? To me, I don't know. That's why I lean more toward George McPhee as the GM of the year. And Gerard Gallant, I mean, great coach, but to me, Stevens is the guy.
Have you been drinking bleach again? Like, have you been like, what have you been sniffing or smoking or whatever it is lately?
I mean, it was like, Christmas. Seriously. I had some scotch.
Yeah, you must have had a lot of it.
Bleach, no.
Like a lot of it. Come on.
No.
Get a grip, no. Larkin. Get a grip. It's Gerard Gallant all the way.
Why? Sell me.
Sell you? Because he took a bunch of guys who were third liners and he's made them the best team in hockey. Okay.
Didn't George McPhee do that by assembling this team, finding the potential in guys like Karlsson and Subban?
I guess, but I think let's face it. This team is not, like, I think, and you said it yourself, who knew? How could anybody have predicted that this group of players would be this good? I mean, we all kind of thought that this team was going to be maybe, like, I thought best case scenario is right now they'd be fighting for a playoff spot. They'd be fighting for that wild card spot.
Right.
Worst case scenario, they'd be down with Arizona, Buffalo, and Vancouver and all those guys.
Yeah.
Here's one thing I don't think you can overlook. He was named coach of this team after he was literally kicked to the curb by the Florida Panthers. You don't think that he was telling George McPhee, hey, George,
Jonathan Marchessault is really good.
Yeah.
Hey, George, Riley Smith is really good.
Yeah.
You should go out and get those guys because on my team, they'll be really good. They'll be good players. And I think that's a big part of it too. So he went out and he got like, you know, 60 goals from the Florida Panthers. And I think part of the reason was because Gallant had such a familiarity with those guys. But I mean, you just can't give it to him. Can't not give it to him, I mean.
Yeah.
You can't not give it to him.
Because he had to implement entirely new systems. He had to bring that team together. And I know what you're saying. Like, maybe McPhee was suggesting, like, hey, we need to do specific bonding things and blah, blah, blah. But I think the fact that he accomplished it and that they have been the best team in the West, you can't look past that. I'll also devil's advocate here.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Doubling down on the devil's advocate.
And is it going to be a devil's pun?
Double devil. No, it's not. This is back to the LA Kings. You have essentially the same core that won two Stanley Cups. You have all world players in Jonathan Quick, Anze Kopitar, and Drew Doughty just off the top.
So there.
So all John Stevens really did
hey,
is,
Hall of Famer, go out and play.
Yeah.
Hey,
here, team
I'm
that missed the playoffs
door.
Two of the past
hey,
three
I'm
seasons.
I'm opening the door. He just, Anze Kopitar, yeah. Go out and do what you're yeah. really good at. Hey, yeah. Open the door.
Hey, slowest team in the league, play fast.
What he did was unsutter them.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's not hard. It's just like, don't be held back.
It's like Game of Thrones, the Unsullied. They're the Unsuttered.
They're the Unsuttered.
I will also say, with respect to Gallant in Vegas, I think it's one thing to be the coach and to be this nice guy and everything. It's another thing to instill a culture of winning in that team.
Mm.
And he has done that. The way they dealt with... And I mean, I assume that... That Gallant was part of the Vadim Shipachev situation.
Yep.
And it was like, I need the players here that are going to help me win. This guy's not going to help us win right now. He's got to play in the minors. And if he doesn't like it, he's going to go home. So he went home. And so then the other players look around. They go, right on. So it is a meritocracy. So if the GM, who it turns out, kind of probably made a pretty big mistake on this one, is not going to keep the guy in the lineup because he's no good, then that creates a culture of winning, and I think that comes down to the coach.
All right. I mean, I think you guys are going to be right. Gallant's going to win, and he was second on my ballot, but, you know, I'm just saying I prefer a situation where you can really prove the handiwork, and you can see it in L.A. I think you're probably right in Vegas, but we just can't prove it when every single piece is
okay, there. Well, then if you're going to go by that, then John Cooper should win it.
Because he's the coach of the best team.
And Tampa didn't make the playoffs last year.
Really? Steven Stamkos was hurt.
Yeah. So what?
That's huge.
They still had an drop. Enormous amount of talent. Still had enormous amount of talent.
They almost made the playoffs.
What's that?
They almost made it, but I mean, it was because they missed because Stamkos was hurt. We know that's the reason. Let's move on now. Looking at the Pittsburgh Penguins, the defending champions going for a three-peat. They are in the playoffs right now, but just barely. I think last night's win, Sunday night's win, put them from out to in with a 1-point cushion.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty clear that Jim Rutherford, I mean, he's always been an aggressive GM. I think he's right up there with David Poile. He makes moves to make his team better. He traded for Phil Kessel. He traded for Patrick Hornqvist, Trevor Daley, Carl Hagelin. The list goes on and on and on. So I think it's safe to say he's going to make some kind of aggressive move, at the very least for a third-line center, maybe something bigger. I mean, there's rumors, Max Pacioretty, something like that. What do you guys think? Are you worried about the Penguins? Do you think they do need to make major changes right now? And if so, what kind of changes?
I'm not worried about them, and I don't think they need to make major changes. I think this is a team that has spent the first half of the season basically saying, we're really tired, and we know how to win, and they've done it. They've been doing it lately. They've won three of their last four. Last night they came back against the Bruins, and then they lost the lead, and it might have been the other way around. I don't know. I think Pittsburgh had the lead. Boston caught them. Then Boston had the lead, and then Pittsburgh caught them or something. Anyways, they showed a lot of character. They won in overtime. Malkin's being Malkin. Crosby's starting to be Crosby. You know, Chris Letang isn't -5 every game now again. He's starting to be a plus player. He's come around. I mean, in goal, you've basically put your faith in what you have. I mean, I don't think they're going to go out and get another goalie at the deadline. So to me, I think this is a team that knows how to win, that knows what it takes, exactly what it takes. And this is a team that you can truly say that all they have to do is get in. That's all they have to do. And if they get in,
they could go on a run. I'm not saying they will, but this is a team, you know, that you can say. I mean, Carolina, you can't say, geez, all Carolina has to do is get in. Yeah, and then the next thing you know, they could win the Stanley Cup. Yeah, I don't think so. Probably. But Pittsburgh, that's a team you could truly say, as long as they get into that eighth wild card spot by 1 point and get into the playoffs, that is a team that you
They're playing Washington.
Yeah, because they're playing Washington in the first round.
I would also be worried, too, that if you make a trade, for example, like if you wanted to get Ryan Nugent-Hopkins from Edmonton or something like that to really bolster yourself down the middle, what are you giving up in return? Because right now Pittsburgh has a very thin system, and with good reason, they've been too busy winning Stanley Cups.
Right.
So, you know, you mortgage the future for the present, you get your cups, and that's why you do. That's why Jim Rutherford is doing such a good job in Pittsburgh, because he's winning titles there. But you can't do it forever, because eventually you run out of future, you run out of pipeline. And you know, it's good to see that Daniel Sprong is getting some time up there and playing with Crosby, and Dominic Simon's the same,
and maybe that's the additions we're talking about.
And maybe that's
maybe those are the kind of additions we're talking about. Daniel Sprong comes in and gets a 2 goals the other night, or right. 2 goals and an assist the other night, you know.
Yeah, that line,
and so maybe
really
that's
good.
What we're talking about. Maybe Jamie Oleksiak, although he kind of messed up yesterday, maybe he becomes what Justin Schultz was a couple of years ago, a guy who came there as a broken man and kind of rebuilt his game and you know, that kind of thing. I think that's more what we're likely to see.
Yeah, and I mean, if they end up missing the playoffs, I think you just have to say, like, hey, it's really hard to do what they've done, and they could win the cup next year.
This is good podcast fodder, because I actually couldn't disagree more. For several.
Why are you being such a disagreeable?
I know, this is good. This is good entertainment.
Why are you
doing
that?
For one, when we talk about a team that you know they're tired, they're waiting, and they're not going to burn themselves out if they get in, they'll make a run. That's what we said about LA the last few years, guys, and they missed the playoffs 2 of the past 3 years. LA's got to be the cautionary tale for Pittsburgh to not rest on their laurels. And what's different about this year's Penguins team and the last two teams is they had Nick Bonino as their third line center. They had Matt Cullen as their fourth line center. They're very thin at center. I mean, no, Evgeny Malkin is very injury prone. He always gets nicked up, and it's only a matter of time before he misses several more games again. And then your second line center is Greg McKegg, Carter Rowney. I think there's a huge problem with depth there. And the thing about the Penguins teams, yes, they've been able to promote guys from within in recent seasons, like Brian Rust, Connor Sheary, amazingly well, but they also made a whole bunch of trades. They got Ron Hainsey last year, just off the top of my head. There's so many deals that they've made. And to me, they are still in their window. Crosby and Malkin and Kessel and Letang, they only have so many years left. So this is the time to keep going pedal to the metal. You've almost cleaned out your farm system. I agree, Ryan. But that's why you continue that. You go balls to the wall until Crosby starts to tail off. And to me, that means, doesn't necessarily mean trading Daniel Sprong, but it means throw out a first-round pick if you need to, if it's going to get you a Max Pacioretty, or if it's going to get you a Nugent Hopkins, someone like that, because you're in your window, you're going for your three-peat, and then, yes, Pittsburgh is going to be bad probably in several years when Crosby's prime is over. But
well, how does Max Pacioretty help him at center?
Well, he'd heat up on the wing, but I mean, I think the Penguins need more scoring.
Really, do you really think that Montreal's going to give Max Pacioretty for a first round pick from Pittsburgh?
No.
Who, if they end up winning the cup, will end up being the 31st pick.
Of course not.
Overall?
That's just an example. I'm just saying those are two separate things, but my point is just Pacioretty is one of the names that's being linked to Pittsburgh,
right?
Because they're looking for every type of forward, I think. But of course, third line center is the most important. But when I mention Pacioretty, all I'm saying is I think it's okay to be aggressive and go for it, because you're so far gone now, right? It's not like you have much in your farm system. You may as well finish emptying it out, and then you can start from scratch once Crosby and Malkin's primes are over. That's where I stand.
Gotcha.
But that's a something good to think about. That's a good point. We certainly can't bury you like we buried you on the John Stevens.
All right.
You brought up some good points.
Take it. we got time for some reader questions, maybe just a couple. The first one, I mean, this is the, I feel like every podcast we're like, oh, I guess we got to talk about the Oilers again, because the problem never ends. This is from Vili Penninen, or Penninen, I think it's Penninen. He says, what's happening in Edmonton? Peter Shirelli has always sucked. These are Vili's words, not mine. Peter Shirelli has always sucked, but now it's even worse. Do we see another first pick traded by him? And has there been anyone in the league who has sold so much first pick players? Has there been anyone more than Shirelli who's done that? I mean, I don't know where to start, but I mean, it's clear the Oilers are a mess. Yeah. And it's about the blame game these days. Who do you think is responsible, and what would you do?
I think it's on the GM. I think this is on the GM. I think this roster is it's really poorly constructed. I mean, you look at that team, what could they use right now more than anything? Speed. A guy like, say, Taylor Hall? You think maybe they could use a fast, creative, tough guy who goes to the net and skates hard and to play with McDavid right now? You think they could use that more than a big defensive defenseman? Yeah, I think they could probably use that more. No, this team is really poorly constructed. What concerns me, though, is that it'll be very convenient to fire the coach, because this team is now looking defeated. And they're not, I mean, what have we heard the last couple of games when they've just been blown out? It's like they didn't show up, they didn't play, there's no effort, so then it makes it very convenient to say, fire Todd McLellan, when in reality, I think the real grassroots problem is that exactly what you said, Ryan, that this team is not, you know, they've got the fastest, most gifted player in the world, and they've surrounded them with players who can't keep up.
Yeah, I don't think in this day and age you can have Milan Lucic, Zach Kassian, and Patrick Maroon all on the same roster. All on their own, you can get value of different types out of all those guys, but you can't have all of them at the same time because you're losing other elements of the game. And then, you know, you look at Oscar Klefbom having an off year, to say the least. Cam Talbot having an off year. Maybe Al Montoya is the answer. Just kidding.
Poor Al Montoya. Sorry, Al.
I mean, he can only do so much, right? If Cam Talbot can't, like, carry the water, then, like, you know, what's, like, a backup goalie going to do for you? Other than, I guess, give Cam Talbot a little more, you know, runway, a couple more days off. But, I mean, I think right now their chances of being in the playoffs are pretty much null. So you just have to look forward. And, you know, he talked about trading first rounders or first overall picks. And I mean, if they trade Nugent Hopkins and get value, that's probably good for them. The only other GM I can think of who's tossed away so much talent is Mike Milbury. And he hasn't had a hockey ops job in more than a decade.
The only thing is with their Nugent Hopkins thing, I know earlier in the year, McLellan was saying that Nugent Hopkins was game in, game out their best forward. I guess it's always like, aside from Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying. But he's, you know, I don't think he's been really part of the problem there this year.
Oh, not the problem, but his value is what I'm saying. Like, if you're going to extract maximum value from this roster.
But isn't he a guy that's part of the solution? And you know, you ship him out, I mean,
you could get even slower.
Yeah, and so to me, it's like that would reek of a panic move to me. Yeah.
Well, if you get speed in return, say you got, like, and I know Carl Hagelin's having a bad year, but if you got Carl Hagelin and, like, Connor Sheary, for example, for the news, then all of a sudden you're getting faster, and you're getting more bodies.
It's interesting. There seems to be an unwritten rule that in every regime, whether it's fair or not, the coach gets axed first and then the GM. So I feel like I agree. McLellan.
Well, there's a very good reason for that. Well, the coach is the GM is the coach's boss.
I know. But what I'm saying is, before the ownership can get to the GM, the coach goes first, because the GM's obviously trying to pass the blame. So of course McLellan, I think, is the first one with the target on his back. But I did want to ask you guys, do you think, and this is it was a reader that asked me this, and it was a good question last week. Do you think the Oilers are a team that would benefit from the Taskmaster coach coming in? Kind of like when Sutter first took over the Kings in 2011-12. Are they a team that you think, because they seem to have that lack of focus, they win a game, then they sit back? Kind of, you know, when Ken Hitchcock took over the Blues, also when he took over Columbus, we've seen it time and again historically, even Tortorella in Columbus. I don't know. Do you think the Oilers could be saved by that kind of coach, like a Taskmaster?
Well, I'm not sure that Todd McLellan isn't. Like, he's not a
player's coach. I think he's medium. I think he's in the middle.
He's not exactly a pushover.
No, not at all.
You know, and in fact, he's been pretty quick to put the blame on the players when they don't play well. Mm-hmm. So,
I think what Matt is saying is that Mike Keenan is definitely going to be the next coach of the Edmonton Oilers. I'm pretty sure that's what Matt is saying.
I did ask Mike Keenan a couple years ago if he'd ever go back, and he said, no one's called me, but he seemed interested. So there you go. I think one more question we can squeeze in. It's from CJ Miller. And CJ says, how impressed are you with the Colorado Avalanche this season, considering you all had them being as bad as the Coyotes this year? We had them worse than the Coyotes, I think.
Probably.
In our standings predictions, yeah. We touched on it a little earlier, but what else do you guys have to say about the Avs' surprising success?
Well, I mean, yeah, on top of McKinnon and Mikko Rantanen, I think you have to look at the defense getting a little more mobile back there. And, you know, obviously Semyon Varlamov in net playing out how he did a couple of years ago. And it is really interesting to see Colorado come together like this. And I think it also speaks to Jared Bednar behind the bench having a little more time to implement his systems and his structure. You know, we talk about what a disaster last year was, but that was his first year as head coach. And, you know, sometimes it takes a while. I remember talking to John Tortorella when he took over Columbus. It was during the season, and he couldn't really do much with the Jackets at the time because he didn't have his training camp. He didn't have it, you know, the preparation the way he wanted to. Now, the Avs, who were, you know, most of them left over from last year, they know what's expected of them from Bednar. They know what, you know, how he wants to play. And I think what we're seeing is that learning curve is all of a sudden, you know, they've caught up and they know what's expected, and Bednar can get more out of them because they're more prepared.
Well, yeah, and I mean, the thing you said about Tortorella too, I mean, even, you know, with the same guy, it was the Tampa Bay thing too. I mean, he took them from being the doormats of the league to the Stanley Cup champions. So, I mean, it does take a bit of time and that sort of thing. But, you know, I mean, I'd love to say this is all because they traded Matt Duchene, but I'm not sure it is, because they were 8-5 when they traded Matt Duchene, and they're only 14-11-3 since they've traded him.
Interesting.
So they were 3 games over .500 when they traded him. They're 3 games over .500 now since they've traded him.
Huh.
But I think you've got to think that that's part of it. I mean, you know, that sort of albatross no longer around the team, you know, a better feeling. And I think, too, like I mentioned before, I think it's allowed Nathan McKinnon to really blossom and to become the leader of this team. And, you know, I mean, they've won, five in a row? I think they've won 5 in a row.
Something like that.
So, I mean, obviously these guys are rounding into form. Mikko Rantanen's really starting to put up some numbers. Mm-hmm. I think Tyson Barrie, you know, he's a guy that's a big part of this as well, and a guy that, for whatever reason, they haven't re-signed and probably have to get around to doing that. But it's a great story. I think if these guys make the playoffs, it's going to be a great, great story.
And it's something Ryan said earlier in the year. I think you just said it in casual office conversation that McKinnon's become more of a playmaker. And Alexander Kerfoot, I mean, in other years, I mean, he's on pace for more than 50 points. He won't even sniff the Calder conversation, but he's been really good too. And I think the Avalanche just have better puck distributors this year. Even Carl Soderberg is kind of back from the dead. And it seems like they're doing a better job setting up their forwards with chances. And also, I mean, they've been the quote-unquote awful possession team for a good 5 years. And they're not great, but they're no longer awful. They're just merely not good.
Right.
So I think
they're like
20th. So suddenly it's finally improvement. So that means something. I think that's about it for today, everyone. Hope you enjoyed having us all back together. It was fun, and we're back for the stretch run. And we'll see you next week, or we'll hear you next week. Well, you'll hear us next week.
We'll talk to you next week.
There you go.